an illegal, invalid, and unconstitutional impeachment.
And then they announced there was no buys. Now, you know what we're doing? And it's not easy.
Thieves everywhere. The strong must protect the sweet. The sweet. I want it all. The terrifying lows, the dizzying highs, the creamy middles. Sure, I might offend a few of the blue noses with my cocky stride and musky odors. Oh, I'll never be the darling of the so-called city fathers who cluck their tongues, stroke their beards, and talk about what's to be done with this.
A regular president would have been under a table, thumb in the mouth, saying, take me home, mommy, this is too tough for me. I have to tell you, as bad as it is, it meant something. When you had serious high crimes and misdemeanors. The impeachment is a hoax. It's a sham. It started a long time ago, probably before I came down the escalator with the future First Lady.
All right, first of all, what's with all the slurring, man? Trump's going to be the first president to get pulled over for a sobriety test in the middle of one of his rallies. Can you say the alphabet backwards? I can't say it forwards. Second, don't say, I came down the escalator like you were George Washington crossing the Delaware. It wasn't noble or cool. You rode an escalator to announce your campaign for president like you were at a Macy's looking for men's underwear.
I'm running for president. Also, where do you keep your dumpiest khakis?
Third and most important, you think Democrats were secretly plotting to impeach you before you announced that you were running for president? How'd that work? You think President Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Nancy Pelosi were all in a secret room together saying, okay, you know that famously dumb game show host? You know, the one who spends most of his time yelling at Meatloaf? Well, he's about to ride an escalator down to announce his campaign, so here's our plan to bring him down. We're going to win the popular vote by 3 million votes, but then we'll lose the Electoral College because, you know, it's a dumb, antiquated system. And then we're going to wait 3 years until he calls the president of Ukraine and asks him to dig up dirt on Joe Biden, who will announce that he's running for president. And also, Rudy Giuliani's gonna go on TV and confess to everything. This is just the world we live in now. The president's a deranged, conspiratorial lunatic who's fundamentally untethered from reality. In fact, on Friday, Trump lied and claimed that his poll numbers have actually gone up since impeachment began.
My poll numbers, as you know, have gone through the roof.
Help me, I think I'm falling.
The polls have gone through the roof for Trump, because people, especially with independent voters, and especially in swing states, I could show you numbers that nobody has ever seen numbers like this before.
What are you talking about? We're getting numbers no one has ever seen?
11-teen, something called a Thrix. That's the first Thrix we've ever seen, you guys.
I have the right to do whatever I want as president.
But we know Trump is lying because polls have consistently shown that about half Americans want him at least impeached, if not removed from office altogether. Even a new Fox News poll over the weekend confirmed that. And it was a poll that surprised even Fox & Friends morning host, Brian Kilmeade, who said this morning that he was stunned to see how high the number was.
In the latest Fox News poll, 50% of registered voters think the president should be impeached and removed from office, up 1 point since October. 4% think he should be impeached but not removed from office, and 41% do not think he should be impeached at all.
The Fox poll came out, and I was stunned by this. It says 50% of the country want the president impeached. I was stunned to see that that's the number because I thought that things were trending away.
Yeah, you know why you thought that? Because you only listen to Trump and you only watch Fox News. You're like a guy who works at Arby's who eats an actual burger for the first time and says, what? This burger doesn't taste like horse. When Kilmeade saw that poll, he was probably like, but I thought Trump's approval rating was up to 11-teen Thrix. That's what I heard. So Trump has clearly both been watching the impeachment coverage and also getting enraged about it, although he'd love for us to believe he's not. On Friday, for example, he insisted he was working on other more important issues, like a supposed trade deal he keeps claiming he's negotiating with China.
Mr. President, your reaction to the vote in the House Judiciary this morning?
Well, I was actually, believe it or not, finishing up the final, I was doing the final touches on the China deal.
I do not believe it. Also, If you do anything, it's not the final touches. They maybe let you help out in the beginning a little bit so you have ownership. You know, the way you let your toddler stir the frosting but not put the cake in the oven.
Sometimes it's hard to be a woman. Give him all your love to just one man. You'll have bad times, and he'll have good times, doing things that you don't understand. But if you love him, you'll forgive him, even though he's hard to understand. And if you love him, I'll be proud of him, 'cause after all, he's just a man.
So now that impeachment is, it'll move to the Senate for trial, where the senators themselves will act as jurors. And Republican senators who will act as those jurors are already on TV defending the president before the trial even begins. For example, there was Senator Rand Paul, who kept insisting in a contentious interview with CNN's Jake Tapper that Trump was just worried about corruption in general, even though several of Trump's closest associates have been arrested and jailed. And Paul just kept mindlessly repeating his talking points.
All of them have been convicted of federal crimes. You really think President Trump is concerned about rooting out corruption?
I think most of what you listed and most of the people that were indicted or convicted were alleged to have been part of some sort of huge Russian conspiracy.
I'm asking about President Trump and corruption. I just listed a number of close associates of President Trump's who are either in prison or facing sentencing.
But I think it's
sentencing.
Based on opinion. It's based on
These are criminal sentences. I just wanted to know, do you really think President Trump is concerned about corruption? Just a yes or no. Is that something you really
believe? I do think Ukraine has been one of the corruptest countries on earth.
That's not what I asked.
Russian-backed or Western-backed. All the governments of Ukraine have been corrupt.
He just kept ignoring the question. There's no way to break through with these guys. They just recite their pre-programmed lines. Anchors have to yell at them the way you yell at one of those automated customer service agents. Hello?
Thank you for calling Verizon. How can I help you?
Yeah, I want to cancel my service.
I heard. I want to upgrade my service.
No.
Is that correct?
No. I said I want to cancel.
I heard. Please add a second phone line to my account. Is that correct?
No, I want to cancel.
I heard. I love Verizon. Thank you. Goodbye.
The argument that Trump was just concerned about corruption in general is obviously absurd on its face. In fact, as we speak, Trump's lawyer Rudy Giuliani, who's at the center of this whole scheme, is back in the U.S. from a trip to Ukraine, where he was still digging up dirt on Trump's political rivals. And the Wall Street Journal reports that Rudy is still reporting directly to Trump. When he returned to New York last Saturday, the president called him as his plane was still taxiing down the runway. What did you get? Trump asked. More than you can imagine, Giuliani replied. He was loudly committing crimes on the plane as soon as the plane landed. At this point, whenever Rudy flies, the flight attendants are going to have to announce his Miranda rights. You are now free to use your mobile devices, and remember, anything you say can and will be used against you in a court of law. Not only are they continuing to cheat in the election as we speak, but they're also trying to cheat in the trial about the cheating. Remember, the Senate is supposed to be a fair and impartial jury, but both Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell and Senate Judiciary Chairman Lindsey Graham have said explicitly their only goal is to end the trial as quickly as possible, call zero witnesses, and take their marching orders directly from the president himself.
I don't need any witnesses at all.
Okay, and then
I am ready to go. My goal is to end this as soon as possible for the good of the country.
Stand by your man and show the world you
I'm not I trying wasn't to in pretend any doubt to be a fair juror here.
Everything I do during this, I'm coordinating with White House counsel. There will be no difference between the president's position and our position as to how to handle this.
They're supposed to be the jury, and they're literally going on TV admitting they're not going to be impartial and they're going to take their orders from the president. Only in the Senate can you openly brag that you're not pretending to be a fair jury. Lindsey Graham sounds like a dude who's just making stuff up to get out of jury duty. I can't serve on a jury. My grandma's sick, and I'm her caretaker, and I'm cat-sitting, and I live far away, and I don't speak English, and I'm biased against cops. This is the Republican Party of Trump. A party that sees any challenge to its power as illegitimate, that's fine with cheating to win elections, and that rigs trials to avoid consequences for that cheating. They don't care what they have to do to win, even if it involves cheating, and then defending that cheating by going on TV and spouting
bull. McConnell has a simple plan for the impeachment trial. No impeachment trial. But McConnell could lose control of the proceedings, and this is true, if just four Republicans vote with Democrats to allow witnesses. One of the likely suspects to grow a spine is Utah Senator Mitt Romney. When Romney was asked his opinion on calling additional witnesses, he said, "It's not that I don't have any point of view. It's just that I'm not willing to share that point of view till I've had the chance to talk to others and get their perspectives." Oh, courage. It's just like at the end of the movie when the Romans are about to crucify Kirk Douglas. Then Tony Curtis stands up and goes, "It's not that I'm not Spartacus. I'm just not willing to share whether I'm Spartacus, because first I want to talk to these other guys and find out if any of them are Spartacus. Anyone? No? Okay, I'll sit down.
I have the right to do whatever I want as president."
Trump will probably bounce back. According to one former aide, Trump is the most resilient politician the country has ever seen. Okay, not to be all Teddy Roosevelt got shot, but Teddy Roosevelt got shot and then finished the speech he was giving. Trump gets winded carrying an umbrella up a staircase. The aide thinks, this unnamed aide thinks none of us will be that affected by any of this, predicting we'll just wake up Thursday after this absurd impeachment vote and say, "Well, that was quite a season three finale. What's going to happen in season four?" Yes, exactly. The Trump presidency is just a TV show we all have to live through. I call it The Worst Wing.
This is true. Please don't stop me.
preceding show was recorded at Wave Farms WGXC in the Hudson Valley in New York State.
I'm Brendan Donegan. As part of a WGXC series on nonprofit organizations in Columbia and Greene counties, I'm here with Patty Duchesne at Matthew 25 Food Pantry in Catskill, New York. Hi, Patty.
Hi, Brendan. How are you?
I'm well. How long has the pantry been in existence?
This January, we've been open for 11 years.
What's the mission of the pantry?
The mission of the pantry is to feed the hungry, to clothe people who need clothes, and to give them a helping hand up so they can find a job or a good apartment or something like that.
As I look around, I see it's not just a food pantry. There are lots of other things that are available for people who are your clients. Can you describe some of them for me?
Yes, we do give out food, but we also started giving out clothing because we realized there was a need for clothes, warm clothes. So we give out women's clothes, men's clothes, children's clothes, baby clothes. We give out household goods like dishes or silverware or odds and ends like, you know, coffee pots or microwaves or little things like that, seasonal objects. And, you know, whatever there's a need, we try to fill it.
How many people work here?
Right now I have 46 volunteers, and I have five children from the high school, and I have eight together from the elementary school.
Are there opportunities to volunteer, or is 46 the limit?
No, I still do training classes, and I still bring them on, and I try to at least put them in at least once a month to have them help out, and I always keep them in case somebody can't show up, then I can have a support staff to call.
Where do you get the food, clothes, and furnishings for your clients?
Well, we purchase food from the donations that we get. We purchase food from the Northeast Regional Food Bank up in Latham. And we also get food from our community. So the county's always been good at that. We do food drives at school. They do food drives at, they just did at Caldwell Bankers. Different community organizations. The Boy Scouts is one of our big contributors, too. They collect food for us. So it's a community effort.
What do you need right now as far as supplies go?
I think the most important thing that we need is always food, because we always run out of food. So we're always purchasing food. And right now with the Christmas, we have a Christmas dinner going out this Saturday. You know, a nice ham dinner for them. So mm-hmm.
The 21st of December?
Yes. At 10 a.m. we'll be coming through.
What do you not need if people want to drop stuff off?
Well, what we don't need is any kind of outfit that you would not put on yourself or your child.
What are your plans for the future, and what's on your wish list?
One of my visions for the future is we need a bigger place. I'm grateful for the place that we have, but we've used every nook and cranny. So we need a bigger place, and I want to have an area set up for like a Cold Blue. So for people who are homeless, that we'd be able to keep them warm or let them have a place to stay for, you know, a couple of nights until they can figure out what they have to do.
Okay. What's the biggest challenge of running Matthew 25?
I think it's time. I think I need more time, because there's always something to do. And you're on call a lot, so, you know, it's difficult to be here every day of the week. We're here about 5 days of the week as it is, mm-hmm. you know.
What's the greatest satisfaction?
That would be our clients. Our clients are amazing. I love it when they get a job or they become a manager. Or they stop. I love them coming here, but then sometimes they stop coming here because they make enough money to make their bills meet and their apartment rent, and so they don't want to take advantage of a situation. So then I don't see them.
Yeah. What is the most common misconception about your clients?
Well, I think sometimes that people misunderstand them, and they think that they're stereotyped. They said, "Oh, they're taking advantage of a situation. It's the same people over and over again. They need to get a job. They need to do..." And that is so terribly wrong with the people that come here. The people that come here are working. They're working jobs. When it comes to medical benefits, you know, I was all happy when they were going to get medical benefits, but then the job cut back the hours so they couldn't get it. and they're back to square one. So every time they take a step up, something happens where they got to take a step back, and I just want to be here for them when they need that. But they're good people. They're moms and dads like me and you. And God forbid if your truck broke down or your car broke down, that happens, you can't make it to work. If you don't make it to work for a few days, they're going to fire you. But your rent is due, and the landlord still wants that rent. And it's a cycle, and that's what happens. It's a downward spiral, and they need a helping hand up.
So you're the safety net to help them.
I hope so. Yeah. I hope so.
Where can listeners find Matthew 25? Where in the village of Catskill?
Okay. When I'm giving directions on the phone, this is for people in the community or Athens or Carroll. I said, everybody knows where the Catskill Police Department is in Catskill. So if you go across the street from there, there's the Bank of Greene County. So if you drive around the back like you were going to make a deposit with your car, on the left is the Mexican restaurant, and we're two doors up from there. It's called the Old Brando's Alley, and we're a white, big white brick building.
So you would go down the street on Church Street to Casa Latina, but make a right.
Yes.
Okay.
Your directions are much better than mine.
What are your hours? When can people come by if they're in need?
Well, let's see. It depends on the season. Like right now is Thanksgiving and Christmas, so they've been coming a little bit more because things are running a little short. But our hours are, we're open on Wednesday nights from 6 to 8. We're open on Sundays from 1 to 3. And we're also open on Tuesdays and Thursdays from 4 to 6. Now, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, we're here cleaning and we're stocking and we're getting things ready. But if CPS calls or CPS calls or DSS asks me to help, then we come down and open up anytime to help somebody.
Interesting. Are you on Facebook?
Yes. I have a Matthew 25 Facebook page. I also have a Matthew 25 website. It's www.m25foodpantry.com.
And finally, what's in the name Matthew 25? It sounds like a Bible citation.
And it is. I didn't know what to name it. I didn't really know what I should name this pantry. But the scripture in Matthew 25, it begins with verse 35. It says, "For I was hungry, and you fed me. For I was naked, and you clothed me. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. So for whatever you do for the least of my brethren, you've done unto me." So.
And that is sounds like a mission statement to me. Well, thank you very much, Patty.
Could be wrong. I could be right. Could be wrong. I could be wrong. I could be right. I could be black. I could be white. I could be right. I could be wrong. I could be white. I could be black. Your time has come. Your second skin. The cost so high. The gain so low. Walk through the valley.
could be wrong. I could be right. Could be wrong. I could be right.
You're listening to
WGXA
90.7
FM.
Acra.
Let's listen to that and see how.
Moments before he's hit with a 40-foot wall of sulfuric acid that will horribly burn everything in its path. Now, that's real acid, so I want to see goggles, people.
My eyes, the goggles do nothing.
It's almost always safety first at the Thingularity Radio Program, so don't let that happen to you. Have your questions answered by sending them to catskillmakersinfo@gmail.com and tune in every first Thursday of the month at 7 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM Acra or anytime at WGXC.org.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Fridman Gallery in New York, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You know, I was listening to the radio and I heard this thing.
90.7 FM, listener-aided and abetted radio.
The struggle to vote from the suffragettes to today. I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! With Dennis Moynihan and our weekly Breaking the Sound Barrier podcast. 100 years ago, women won the right to vote in the United States. The women's suffrage movement took decades of organizing to achieve success, from the Seneca Falls Convention in 1848 to mass civil disobedience and protests leading up to the adoption and ratification of the 19th Amendment in 1920. Now, a century later, the right to vote is on perilous ground, with aggressive and systematic efforts to disenfranchise voters in states across the country. Voter suppression has long been a central strategy of the Republican Party. In 1980, Paul Weyrich, a conservative Republican activist who founded right-wing institutions, including the Heritage Foundation, said in a speech,
"I don't want everybody to vote.
Elections are not won by a majority of people. They never have been from the beginning of our country, and they are not now. As a matter of fact, our leverage in the elections, quite candidly, goes up as the voting populace goes down.
States in the so-called Rust Belt, including Pennsylvania, Ohio, Michigan, and Wisconsin, were critical to Donald Trump's victory in 2016. In each of those states, save Ohio, Trump won by less than one percentage point. Now, in Wisconsin, a county judge ruling in a case brought by a conservative organization has ordered that 209,000 people be purged from the voter rolls. The state's Elections Commission has delayed the purge while the case is appealed. In 2016, Trump won Wisconsin by just over 23,000 votes. 2016 was the first election in which Wisconsin's strict voter ID law was in force. The progressive advocacy group Priorities USA reported that the law suppressed the votes of more than 200,000 residents in the 2016 election. Voter ID laws that require people to present photo identification at polling places disproportionately prevent poor people and people of color from voting.
The largest drop-off was among Black and Democratic-leaning voters.
That's investigative journalist Ari Berman on the Democracy Now! NewsHour commenting on the report.
They found that there was a much larger drop-off in Wisconsin than Minnesota, which does not have a voter ID law, that counties with a large African-American population had a larger drop-off.
The Associated Press published a report 2 weeks ago based on a leaked audio recording from a November 21, 2019 meeting of the Wisconsin chapter of the Republican National Lawyers Association. Justin Clark, a senior counsel to Trump's reelection campaign, was recorded saying, "Traditionally, it's always been Republicans suppressing votes in places." He went on, "Let's start playing offense a little bit. That's what you're going to see in 2020. It's going to be a much bigger program, a much more aggressive program, a much better funded program," he said. Justin Clark was talking about organized poll-watching activities where party operatives position themselves at Democratic-leaning voting precincts to challenge voters, demanding election staff verify their identity or bar them from voting. Clark later said his words were misinterpreted. In Georgia, the Republican-controlled state government purged 100,000 voters from the polls in December. The move was approved by a federal judge dismissing a lawsuit brought by Fair Fight, an organization founded after the 2018 election by Democrat Stacey Abrams to promote fair elections in Georgia and around the country. The 2018 Georgia governor's race pitted Abrams against Republican candidate Brian Kemp, who was Georgia's Secretary of State at the time, responsible for overseeing the election and maintaining the voter rolls. In July 2018, months before the election, Kemp oversaw what's been called the largest mass disenfranchisement in U.S. history, purging over 500,000 voters from Georgia's list of 6.6 million registered voters. Kemp received about 50,000 more votes than Abrams out of close to 4 million cast and claimed victory. Stacey Abrams refused to concede, noting Kemp's corruption of the election, but did not fight the results. Despite the aggressive efforts by the right wing to suppress the vote, voting rights advocates are making progress. In Florida, voters passed Amendment 4, restoring voting rights to 1.4 million ex-felons. Republican Governor Ron DeSantis signed a bill forcing those prospective voters to pay all fines and fees associated with their earlier convictions, significantly slowing the restoration of these returning citizens to the voter rolls. Many call it a poll tax. In five western states, from Colorado to Hawaii, mail-in ballots have increased voter participation, reduced costs, and provided an auditable paper ballot trail to allow easy verification of election results. The National Vote at Home Institute is working to expand the practice state by state. And the National Popular Vote Project is working with state legislatures around the country to allocate Electoral College votes to the candidate who wins the popular vote nationally. Democracy is a constant struggle. From the suffragettes to today's voting rights advocates, securing the right to vote should be a common pursuit of us all. I'm Amy Goodman with Dennis Moynihan.
Scenic Hudson is holding a series of workshops around the area this weekend about Hudson River access. Residents of riverfront communities that enjoy fishing, launching boats, bird watching, or hunting along the Hudson shoreline, or just watching the river or the railroad go by, can come to these meetings about waterfront access. Scenic Hudson has commissioned a study to document where people use the river for recreation, the Hudson River for recreation, and where they want shoreline access. They're going to have three meetings locally on this issue. January 3rd at Castleton on Hudson, 7 to 8:30 p.m. in the Fire Department Community Room, 11 Green Avenue, Castleton on Hudson. Also January 4th in Germantown, 10:30 a.m. to noon at the Kellner Activity Center at 50 Palatine Park Road in Germantown. And then also January 4th in Rhinebeck from 3 to 4:30 p.m. at the Rhinebeck Town Hall, 80 East Market Street, Rhinebeck. Go to scenichudson.org for more information about any of these public meetings this weekend about public access to the Hudson River.
Yeah, for some reason or another, you sound a little taller on radio.
Next up, we hear from Catskill-based performer Matt Bua and Ryan Hossepel's 31 Down project with Wireless Electric Chair.
Wireless erection, confusion, confusion, confusion. Why are you listening to jail? Why are you listening to jail? Make my head stare. If you're far away, beware. Wireless electric chair. If you not care, just get in there, fun chair. Confusion. 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 Whoa. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.